Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for a very special, very heavyweight, very intercontinental show by Heather Wixon returning again. Welcome back, Heather.
Thanks, Patrick.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I am good. I'm excited for tonight's topic because those of you out in the F This Movie audience, you know Heather from her horror work. She's been on the show several times and we've talked horror movies. What you might not know is that there's one thing that Heather knows and loves as much as horror, and that is
boobs.
Boobs.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So tonight's show is all about boobs.
Boobs. Yes. We'll go with wrestling. How does that sound?
That sounds glorious. So we are going to be talking about wrestling movies tonight. Movies starring wrestlers. Movies about wrestling. But before we do that, let me do my little spiel about how you can find our website at fthismovie.net. You should follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want more of Heather's writing, Heather, where can people find more of you?
I am over at dailydead.com and also on my blog over at thehorrorchick.blogspot.com.
And they can follow you on Twitter at?
At thehorrorchick.
I have, I want to say, 1/80th of Heather's Twitter followers, and I'm trying to get more. So you guys can follow me. I'm also at the horror chick. I'm at Patrick Bromley. So we've been talking about doing this wrestling show for a while, and we finally got it to work. And so I'm super excited. And we've both watched some good to terrible wrestling movies leading up to this podcast. But do you want to talk a little bit about when did you sort of get into professional wrestling? And you want to talk a little bit about your background with your love of wrestling?
For sure. Basically, I was introduced to wrestling probably when I was around, like, 5 or 6, and my aunt was huge into, like, NWA and all that. So I actually discovered wrestling through Ric Flair first, because I swear to God, my aunt had a framed picture of Ric Flair hanging up on the same wall. She had photos of my cousins. Oh, yeah.
That's hardcore. Wow.
Oh, it was. It was. And it was funny because he actually was at a show in Chicago, and she got a little handsy, and he slapped her.
What?
So that's my claim to fame. Yeah, my Ric Flair slapped my aunt. So she had it coming, though. Not really hard or anything, but he slapped her hands away and kind of was like, lady, get your hands off. So,
did he at least say, like, woo?
No, he was just all, you know, wheeling and dealing and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was funny, though, in retrospect. Not at the time, but, you know. So she's come to terms with it. But,
right,
yeah,
great.
So I just kind of got absorbed into, you know, into it watching through her. And then, you know, it was funny because, like, as a kid, I didn't know many kids who also watched wrestling. There was, like, a group of us, like, at, you know, I was at Bird. And I even remember, like, 4th and 5th grade, like, we would actually do wrestling, like, on the playground.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we would perform as characters. Like, I remember, oh, man, I know Ilyu Villarreal was there. I don't know if you know him from, you know, Oak Grove High School or whatever, but, like, I remember he would play, and, like, Paul Benn was in there, and, like, all these guys and stuff. And I was always pissed off because they always made me be Miss Elizabeth. And I was just like, no. And I remember it was the day of the talent show, my fourth grade year. And they finally let me wrestle, and I was Ricky Steamboat, and I was dressed for the talent show. Thank you. And I was wearing, like, a skirt. I never wear skirts. And, of course, I got so dirty, and I still had to go do the stupid talent show. But, yeah, I just grew up a total wrestling nerd, and I kind of came in and out of it because, you know, as you turn into, like, a teenager, nothing's cool anymore. And, you know, and then I kind of got back into it because of the wedding between, like, Stephanie and Tess, which sounds so stupid. But I'm a sucker for a TV wedding. So I swear to God, I saw the ad in USA Today and I was like, I'm going to watch. It's a wedding. And that was how I got hooked again. I think it was like in 99 or whatever. And okay. And then I kind of phased out a little bit around like the mid to late 2000s, like around 2006. And, you know, but yeah, I used to like travel. Like my vacations were based around WrestleManias because I'm a nerd.
That's intense. How many WrestleManias have you been to?
We did 3 in a row. We did
18,
yeah, we did 18, 19, and 20. We did 18 in Toronto, 19 in Seattle, and then 20 was in New York. And 18 was awesome because it was on my birthday, and that was the Hogan versus Rock match.
That is awesome.
I cried. I was, like, so excited. I felt like such a nerd. But I was, like, as a kid, like, you just, you never imagine, like, you'd sit there as an adult and see something like that. But it was pretty fucking awesome.
WrestleMania 3 was on my birthday. I think my 10th birthday. That's so I wasn't cool. there. I just got to watch it on pay-per-view. But that was very exciting. That was Hogan and Andre the Giant, right?
It was. That was the biggie. It's funny because, like, for me, that was, like, such a huge match. But it's, like, looking back now, like, it's probably the match that I remember the one of the, like, in terms of, like, that versus, like, the Steamboat versus Savage match.
Yeah.
I remember Steamboat versus Savage more than I do Hogan Andre, except that, you know, it has that pinnacle moment of him picking up Andre and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I'm really excited because, you know, they've announced the network and stuff. So I'm really excited to go back and check all that out.
I'd like watching the old stuff. I don't watch wrestling anymore, but for a couple of years there when I was a kid, I was way into it. I think, like, WrestleMania's 2 through 6, basically, is sort of my... That was when I was way into it. So I don't watch it now, but I would love to go back and watch that old stuff. Do you think, like, the night of WrestleMania 3, do you think Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant were pissed because they got totally blown off the stage by Ricky Steamboat and Macho Man?
I don't think so, because I think it's still that moment that everybody still holds as, like, the ultimate WrestleMania moment. Like, no matter what's come and gone since, and it, for as much as, you know, Savage and Steamboat had an amazing match, that's still the moment. Like, even wrestlers now, like, they say that's the moment that, like, defined WrestleMania to them growing up. So for me, like, I still see that as, like, one of the pinnacle moments.
Yeah. For me, it was Roddy Piper shaving Adrian Adonis' head, but that's just because I'm a huge Roddy Piper fanboy.
Oh, my God, I am, too. I so hope that they... I really hope he comes to Flashback again soon.
Yeah,
I was too nervous to go talk to him the last time he was there, so...
He's the bomb. So let's jump into wrestling movies. And
yes.
I'm sure we'll get around to these guys, but let's start just as a caveat. Who do you think, I'm going to discount The Rock, because I think he's the clear answer. Like, if you're going to talk about who's the best wrestler turned actor, or, you know, who's the best wrestler to be in a movie, it's definitely The Rock, hands down. So I'm going to take him out, and then I'm going to take out Roddy Piper, too, only because I feel like he's an easy backup, because They Live is so great, even though most of his other movies maybe aren't so good, but They Live is so great that we all say, oh, yeah, Piper. So taking those two guys out of the equation, who's the best for you?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Boom.
You know, it's hard because, like, there's a lot that I've appreciated from different performances. And it's like, the weird thing is, I don't think there's been wrestlers other than The Rock or Piper. I guess to a certain extent, Hogan, but that have really been able to define a career in entertainment, like, other outside of the ring.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's guys who show up for those moments, like, you know, I mean, Stone Cold, I think, has kind of come into it.
Yeah.
But he's sort of stuck in that same rut of doing the same movie over and over again, where it's like, I would love to see him kind of break out and actually do a horror movie. And I know it's something that he's wanted to do, because I was so freaking lucky that I actually got to, like, talk to him on the phone, I think, for, like, Hunt to Kill or some movie like that, whatever that movie was, Something to Kill.
Yeah, and Hunt to Kill, that's what it's
called. Yeah, with Eric Roberts, right?
No.
I think Is Eric Roberts in that one? I think he's in the opening and gets killed off.
Oh, yeah, you're right, because the main bad guy is, like, isn't, like, Gil Bellows the main bad guy in that?
Yes, from Ally McBeal, oh, my God. I would buy that Gil Bellows could take on Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, really? Like, you, like, no, not Gil. Not, your name's Gil. No.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, so, you know, I think Stone Cold's come close, but I think his, it's just weird. It's like, it's such a hard dynamic that it's like, I don't think every wrestler really translates well into movies. Like, Triple H has been kind of fun here and there, because, like, God help me, but I love Blade Trinity.
Yeah, God help you is right.
I know, it's so terrible, but, like, fucking Parker Posey is so ridiculously over-the-top great in it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, he has these stupid one-liners, and just seeing him, like, pummel the crap out of shirtless Ryan Reynolds.
He needed to talk less. Like, obviously, as a physical presence, I think he works in that movie, but then when he talked, I didn't think it was as good.
Yeah, the problem with that is that Triple H, as a performer, in ring or in movies, mm-hmm. he's just never been that guy. He's not a strong talker.
Yeah.
So I just, like, I think they were pushing him at the time because there was nobody else to push.
Right.
And, you know, now he's, you know, basically running, you know, the whole thing. And it's interesting because I just, you know, you kind of see that his career was a little more deliberate. Like, well, we don't really have anybody else. So, okay, here's Triple H.
Right.
You know, and it sucks because he's, I, you know, I think there's some fun to his character in Blade Trinity, but oh my God, The Chaperone, holy hell.
I never saw The Chaperone.
You haven't lived until you do that with Knucklehead back to back.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know if I've heard of Knucklehead.
That's with The Big Show.
Oh, yikes.
That's a recent one. If you saw the artwork, you would know that, you just know what you're in for as soon as you saw the cover up. Oh yeah.
I tried really hard to track down a copy of Bending the Rules.
Yes,
Jamie Kennedy and Edge, I believe.
I thought it was on Netflix. It's not.
Oh God, if it is, I'm gonna be so upset because I didn't check. I don't think it is.
Because WWE has most of their movies on there, because I know Knucklehead and Chaperone are.
Watch them tonight.
There you go.
I'm a terrible human being.
Triple feature. There you go.
Okay, we're jumping all over the place, but I'm going to throw this out as long as we're talking about Netflix. You know what is on Netflix that I actually think is pretty good is a movie called Bounty Hunters with Trish Stratus.
Yes. I adore Trish. Trish is awesome. And I'm glad that she's pregnant and having a kid and everything, or I think she just had a kid. But I actually would love to see her either get back into the ring or do more acting. Because I think she actually has a lot of really natural charisma.
Yeah, and I think she's good. Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. She's very tiny. And it freaks me out sometimes because she's so small. And they don't do her any favors in that movie because, of course, they put her in, like, this schoolgirl uniform.
Of course.
And that's obnoxious. But then it also fits weird, so it makes her look like her torso is actually about 8 inches long. Just the way that it's... So they don't do her any favors with the wardrobe in that movie, but I think she's really good in the movie. She has this fight in the back of an ambulance that's actually really awesome, and I kind of like the movie overall. It's very sort of Canadian and very just like working class, this is our job and this is what we do. And I'm a fan of the movie. For the record, I just checked Netflix, and that Jamie Kennedy movie, which I've already forgotten the name of, is not on Netflix.
Oh, okay. It used to be, because I know...
I'm very upset that I missed it, then.
We toyed with it for a good couple of weeks, and then we were like, no, I just can't. I mean,
Bending the rules? Is that what it is?
Probably bending or breaking.
Bending the rules. It's bending the rules.
I do have one claim to fame that's Edge-related.
All right.
I actually, this was like 2002, 2003. I ended up meeting Edge, Lance Storm, and Christian... there's like a diner that's right down the street from Allstate Arena, and that's where all the wrestlers hang out after pay-per-views, which, by the way, if anybody's listening who goes to, you know, events at the Allstate Arena, whatever that restaurant down the street is, go find wrestlers there after. So I'm sure WWE is going to love that. But anyway, but I met them, and I was such a nervous wreck, and it was just such an awkward thing, but I took a picture with them, and that picture is actually in Lance Storm's book.
Wow, cool.
He got it off my MySpace page, of all things.
That's fantastic.
I know. And I look like such a dork. Like, I'm like, I look so terrified.
Whatever. But you're in a wrestling book.
I am. So that was my cool little Edge lit, you know, claim to fame. But he's a really nice guy.
I saw him. He was in like 2 minutes of a Highlander movie. And I saw that. That movie
He's also on that show Haven, I believe, on Sci-Fi.
I believe you. I've never seen it. You know who seems like maybe he's going to transition into an actual career is...
Batista?
Yeah, Dave Batista.
Yeah, it's interesting because they just brought him back, and it's such a weird time right now. I'll give you a little background. There's a guy, Daniel Bryan, who's like an indie wrestler. So fucking awesome. It's interesting because I've been watching like his DVDs for a while, and like Brian is kind of like showing me all like years of stuff from like Ring of Honor and all that kind of stuff and all these like local shows. And so he's now become like the big thing in WWE. He gets people to respond to him in ways like John Cena doesn't, which is insane because it's John Cena, you know? And so Batista comes back like last week to WWE and it's supposed to be this huge thing. Well, he won the Rumble And it, like, almost turned out into, like, a riot because Daniel Bryan wasn't in the Rumble. So the fans in Pittsburgh were, like, freaking out. So, Batista kind of lost his shit at the end of the pay-per-view. It was, like, flicking people off and stuff. And I'm like, dude, you can't do this. But I like him. Like, I was so lucky I got to interview him for all things Scorpion King 3.
Which I have not seen.
It's actually fun. It's got Billy Zane and Ron Perlman. So immediately there, you can't go wrong. Because, you know, it is what it is. It's the third Scorpion King movie, so you already know what you're in for. And it actually turns out to be a lot of fun. And, you know, so I got to interview him for that. And then it was like, I liked him in Riddick. I thought he was perfectly fine in the role he was. And I'm really excited to see what he can do in Guardians of the Galaxy. Because I trust James Gunn, and I think he's got a good eye for, like, offbeat talent.
Right.
And I don't think he would have put him in that for, you know, if he didn't think he could handle it.
Right. At the time, I was bummed out because it was maybe going to be Jason Momoa, and I'm a big Jason Momoa fan. And so I was super excited about that possibility. And they're like, no, it's going to be this wrestler. And I was like, God damn it.
I love Jason Momoa. He's doing a movie with WWE. They picked up his movie that he just did or something like that. Yeah.
All right.
So I adore him. He was, the Conan movie was not great, but he was a lot of fun. And I think he's actually friends with The Rock.
Yeah, he was not the problem with the Conan movie.
No.
But yeah, and I think that might have been before I saw Man with the Iron Fist, which I thought Batista was fine in, and I thought he was pretty good in Riddick. And so if Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, is good and very successful, obviously he's a guy who could possibly branch out and have a bigger career. I saw something that he did a long time ago called Wrong Side of Town, where
I haven't seen that.
It's not good. He's like a supporting role, and the lead is Rob Van Dam, and Rob Van Dam should not be the lead in a movie.
Ever. Oh man, he's so awful, dude. I love Rob Van Dam, but it's like he's a stoner. Like he's chillax. He's just hey man, like, you know. He's kind of like the McConaughey of wrestling.
Oh, no.
He's just very chillax. So maybe he'll bloom at a later date, kind of how McConaughey is.
Well, you know, the part of the problem is, and maybe this isn't a problem, is that, like you had kind of said up front about Steve Austin, is like, they really only put these guys in one kind of role.
Absolutely.
And so making Rob Van Dam like the lead of this kind of generic action movie, like, maybe isn't the right choice. If they want to branch Rob Van Dam out into movies, like, give him a character part where he does play more of like a stoner. And I'm sure the thinking is, yeah, but the fans don't want to see him in that kind of part. They, you know, wrestling fans are only interested in action movies, that one begets the other. And maybe that's true. I don't know. But I feel like I've yet to see, and I've been writing this thing about The Marine and The Condemned for a long time, and I just can't finish it, but in it I talk about how I have yet to really warm to Stone Cold Steve Austin as an actor, and I feel like part of the problem is, like you said, he just keeps playing the same part, but I don't think they've found the right part for him yet. Like, I know The Marine is not a great movie. I dig it because it's ridiculous in like the way that a lot of 80s action movies are, and part of what I think works about the movie is that it's the right part for John Cena. He's not a great actor, but he's well cast because it just requires him to play like such a goody-goody dork, and that works for him in that movie, I think. And I feel like they haven't yet found the right part. I think if they find the right part for Steve Austin, I think he could be really good, but I feel like they haven't given him the right thing to do yet.
Yeah, and I think what part of that is they have to do something how they kind of did with Andre with Princess Bride. Because, like, growing up, Andre the Giant was this big, scary guy. Like, he was the villain. He was the guy that, you know, was going to take down Hulk Hogan. And I think, you know, by putting him in something like Princess Bride, where he's playing, like, probably the most lovable character from the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you can't not think of him in that movie and not fucking smile. Like, it's so, like, it's just one of the best. Like, it's one of my favorite things of, like, growing up is just watching him in Princess Bride.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, anybody want a peanut? You know? It's like, you can't not smile and think of that. And I think that was brilliant because it would have been so easy for him to play, like, a villain. And I think by making him, you know, sort of this lovable oaf, like, it really made people kind of see him totally different.
Right.
And it also made him as a performer, have to stretch and be somebody that he wasn't always being for the last 20 years, you know, in wrestling. And I think that's the thing with Stone Cold. Like, I kind of would actually like to, you know, I know he was in Grown Ups 2, but God, I'm not going to go watch it. But I'd like to see Stone Cold try something like, you know, being like the nice, like a funny guy in comedy. Because you know what? He was hilarious, like, in the 90s. Right. He's got comedic timing, you know, and I think he's got to kind of branch out. And I think that was sort of the interesting thing about, like, The Rock's earlier career, is that he wasn't afraid to take risks and play all different kind of things.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, and not all of them worked, and he knows that. And I think that's the beauty of becoming better as a performer, is that you just have to keep trying something different. Right. And I don't know that Stone Cold's really been able to let go yet to where he's going to be able to play a gay cowboy kind of, you know, singing character, like, and be cool.
Right.
Like how The Rock did. So it's, he's got to, he just has to do something that is so unexpected that, you know, that's going to throw people off. And I think, you know, it's going to get people who are wrestling fans who maybe wouldn't watch that kind of movie. Like, that's going to interest them. But I think it also is going to open up people who sort of still look down on wrestling or, you know,
right.
have a certain opinion about the people that are involved with it. Like, I think it'll show them, like, you know, there's, you know, it's not just, you know, guys throwing guys around. There's actual, right. like, performance skill to it.
Well, part of the problem, I wonder if, once WWF or WWE got into sort of the movie business, I feel like that kind of changed things. Because Andre the Giant is able to do Princess Bride because it existed completely independently from wrestling. He was just like another job that he took that had nothing to do with wrestling. But then once Vince McMahon got into like producing movies, all of a sudden WWE is kind of steering the ship and movies have to be a certain way and you can only appear in certain parts and he has to be, you know, he has to get a producer credit or whatever. And so there's a sameness to a lot of the movies and they keep trying to like make a new wrestler pop as an action hero by sticking, you know, the flavor of the year into the newest direct-to-video Marine sequel.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until, because The Rock's first couple movies, like, were fine, and right away you get the sense, oh, boy, this guy has chops, and he's a good actor, and more than anything, he has just great presence, and he just has tons of charisma. So with or without wrestling, like, there's a good chance that that guy was going to be a star. But his first couple movies are very much guided by that whole Vince McMahon thing, and it's not really until Be Cool where you say, and I'm not a big fan of Be Cool, although I think The Rock is probably one of the best things about it. It's not really until then that you kind of notice, oh, okay, he's serious about this acting thing. Like, he wants to do this. It's not just, hey, I'm this wrestler and I'm going to, you know, once a year in my 3 months off or whatever, I'm going to go shoot an action movie. That he's serious about sort of cultivating a body of work where, like you said, he does different stuff. And, you know, Steve Austin, I think, and again, I don't follow wrestling really anymore, but he's been away from wrestling for long enough now where, I mean, Vince McMahon has nothing to do with his career, right?
No, he still pretty much owns, you know, the thing is with these guys, Vince is going to own their name forever.
But he could be just Steve Austin, right? I mean, I know he can't be Stone Cold, but
he could. But you know, I mean, it's one of those things. Like a lot of these guys, they don't ever really want to get away from the business because
okay.
I think they know that they've got it so good.
Right.
And the thing is, it's like, and Steve, you know, he's sort of now branched out into making his own sort of his own media personality because he does like his own podcast and stuff
yeah.
now. And a lot of those guys are doing that now, which is really cool as a fan, like. Hearing them talk about stories that, you know, you probably would never hear in a million years, especially not like on some WWE, you know, documentary or anything like that, because those
right.
things are so...
Except for that Ultimate Warrior one.
Oh, man, if I could get my hands on that, I am telling you.
They are very candid on that one.
Yeah, and it's funny because Warrior's going into the Hall of Fame this year. So it's really interesting to see how that all, you know, how everything, money changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because, like, you know, we were talking about something today, and I was like, and Brian's like, why would you do that? I'm like, money. I'm like, you know, Million Dollar Man taught us everybody has a price. And they do. They really do. And especially when it comes to Vince McMahon's money. I don't give a shit who has worked in this business. If they've pissed Vince off at some point and they ever want to get, like, legit again, they will come back.
Yeah.
And they always do.
Yeah.
And
Million Dollar Man knew his shit, man.
Oh my God, I was like, my first Comic-Con, I had to interview The Miz for a friend's website. So I'm standing in the WWE booth waiting to go talk to him, and I'm like seriously touching shoulders with Ted DiBiase, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and some other guy, and then Virgil is there too.
Well, of course Virgil's there.
But, you know, obviously not in that role, I hope.
Well, Virgil, like, we get maybe a couple wrestlers at some of the Chicago Comic-Cons, like CM Punk will do it, but mm-hmm. Virgil is like a fixture. Ted DiBiase, I don't think, has ever been there, but it's usually, like, Virgil and maybe Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, well, those guys, like Ted DiBiase, he actually works in booking now, and so does, you know, a lot of the older guys, like, yeah. They do, like, a lot of the booking now, so they're just there, you know, as support.
Right.
But I'm, like, standing there just waiting to talk to The Miz, and I'm just like, oh, my God. I'm standing like 8-year-old me would be freaking out right now. Like I was just like, just don't blow this. Just don't freak, you know.
Was he wearing the $1 million belt?
He had it with him at Comic-Con, but he didn't have it there now. Cause they were doing like some signing or something at the booth. So he was escorting talent. So I was just like, okay, don't freak out. This is, be cool. You know, it's all good.
Let me take it back to,
take it back to
the big man.
Yes.
Let me take it back to the Hulkster, because you and I both in the last week have watched No Holds Barred, was WWF's first real attempt to get into making their own movie.
Yes, I saw it at the drive-in twice. I just want to go on record as saying.
Wait for the second run theater.
Oh, my mom was so angry, but I was like, I have to see it just one more time, and so we went to the drive-in. 2 weekends in a row.
They debuted that trailer, I think, at WrestleMania 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a nerd at that time. I'm clearly not anymore. But I, held up a tape recorder to my TV, and I recorded segments of WrestleMania 5. There was a Piper's Pit that I recorded, and I recorded the trailer for No Holds Barred, and then I would go on walks around my neighborhood. I must have been, like, 11. And would listen to this tape on my Walkman. So I had the No Holds Barred trailer memorized, and I couldn't wait for it to come out. And it eventually did come to the second run theater by my house. And, I mean, I'm sure to some extent I was like, yeah, that was Hulk Hogan, and he wrestled. But I think in my gut I knew that movie is not good. But I didn't know just how terrible it is until I watched it last week. With my jaw on the floor for the entire running time.
It starts heavy and it doesn't stop. And I love every minute of it.
It's fucking insane. Like, it is definitely a very entertainingly, like, there are bad movies that are just shitty and boring and make you sad. And then there's movies like No Holds Barred, which are wildly entertaining in how fucking awful they are.
And here's the thing, like, you have a guy like Kurt Fuller. How did he not know what he was making?
How did he go
through those scenes and be like, yeah, this is excellent filmmaking right here?
See, I don't think he did. And this happens to me every once in a while where I have to remind myself. A couple weeks ago, I watched the Carrot Top movie, Chairman of the Board. And there's a shit ton of, like, character actors in that movie that you would recognize. And you sit there and you say, why are they in this? Like, why do they? And then you remember,
because everybody has a price.
I mean, basically, like, they need to work, you know? We assume that people in movies are living very comfortably, but especially, like, character actors and stuff, they're making a living, but they're not millionaires, they're not living in mansions. So, you know, Kurt Fuller needed a job, and yeah, I had to tell myself that the whole movie, because I was so sad for him watching this thing unfold.
And Joan Severance? Oh, dear.
Oh, she was a Fox, but could you feel the white hot chemistry between her and the Hulkster?
Here's the thing for me, like, there, I mean, obviously that nothing about the movie makes sense, but there, like, that whole business trip thing really doesn't make sense, because I'm sorry, who goes on a business trip and doesn't pack a nightgown or something to sleep in? She's like, I have to share a room with Hulk Hogan, but I'm gonna go to my bed in my bra and underwear, but I'm gonna get pissed when he looks at me.
Right.
Like, you're Joan Severance and you're standing there in a see-through bra. Of course he's going to look.
Well, and that's the thing, and at the time, because
I had a shirt on.
Wrestling eventually, right, she had a shirt that she wore into the hotel room. You could just put that one back on.
Thank you. By the way, and also, I'm pretty sure Hogan in the 80s had, like, a super awesome, like, stock in tie-dye, because he had every color in the rainbow in that movie.
Fuck? His wardrobe in that movie, I'm not a homophobic man, and so I don't suffer from gay panic, but there was something uncomfortable about the clothes that he wears in that movie, especially in that hotel room sequence where he's just wearing, like his little bikini briefs. And it's not about like, oh gosh, I don't want to see a dude in his underwear because I could give a shit. It's something about like how
they shot it,
just how large he is and how unnaturally tan he is. Like, there's something so weird about looking at him. It was upsetting to me, and again, not in like a gay panic way, just in like nothing about that is normal or natural.
And here's the thing: why does he have to take his lycra shorts off to do push-ups? What is it about those shorts that are already so tiny as it is that they're so constricting that he can't do push-ups with his arms?
Why is he getting into bed and doing push-ups? Listen, the wrestling when I was watching it was not like, for the most part, sleazy. I know in the 90s it got, or maybe the early 2000s, I don't know. There was a certain point at which it got really just filthy.
The Attitude Era, for sure.
And I know I think they've gotten away from that now, where they're trying to go back a little bit more family friendly. But when I was watching it, it was definitely more of like a family thing.
I think the worst would ever be was like they would allude to like men staring at Elizabeth.
Right. Yeah, right, right. Yeah. But even that, like George the Animal Steel, he just wanted to marry her. It was like King Kong wanting to take Fay Wray.
Exactly.
But for some reason, there's hints of it all over No Holds Barred at like at the direction that Vince McMahon really wants to go, because it's such a fucking sleazy movie. Even that scene where he's doing the push-ups, like first we get her just listening to the sounds on the other side of the sheet, and the only thing we're supposed to think is that he's jerking off, right? And then she looks, and then you can't tell what he's doing, and oh, he's doing push-ups, okay, great. But there's all these moments that it's obsessed with, like, people shitting themselves, and
It's a lot of potty humor, which, again, you know, I don't... It was 90... That was, like, what 90?
89, I would say, maybe.
Yeah, it was 89, I think.
Yeah,
and, it was. You know, it's interesting to me that, like, that really wasn't that time, you know?
Right.
I mean, they were... It was very off-putting. I think even as a kid, like, some of the scenes, like, in, like, the dirty bar and stuff like that, like, the bathroom scene in there, like...
Right.
I was kind of like, I don't really need this. And it was very much like Vince didn't know his audience, because I think he thought he was going to appeal more to... I think he was trying to bring in the older male demographic, because you have to remember, like, wrestling, like, from the 50s through the 80s, mostly, like, for a long time, like, 50% of your audience were little old ladies. Because that's what you did. Like, you went to shows. Like, you know, especially in the South, man. Little old ladies in the South, they love their wrestling. If you go back and watch some, like, old matches on YouTube, you look at the front rows, little old ladies. They love it. And, you know, and again, when we, you know, when we were growing up and watching, and it was, you know, it was your take, you know, say your prayers, take your vitamins, era.
Yeah, right.
You know, and, you know, so it was like, I think Vince knew that he had a demographic out there that he hadn't quite reached yet. And I think he was trying to find a way to bring him in, but it just wasn't ready yet.
Who did he think was going to like that movie?
I don't know. I mean, I saw it twice. I paid to see it twice. I bought the DVD, and goddammit, I will buy the Blu-ray.
It's coming out on Blu-ray. Here's the thing I can't figure out. Like, Battle of the Tough Guys, I don't buy. We could do a whole show on No Holds Barred. We were kind of tweeting back and forth, like, holy shit, we might have missed an opportunity to just talk about No Holds Barred. Battle of the Tough Guys, I don't even understand, and it's this huge show, and yet it's being filmed in, like, bathrooms and bars. And then we get to the end with the biggest wrestler in the world, which I have to get back to, because I'm so angry about the fact that his name is Rip. So, it's the most popular wrestler in the world, the most important main event of all time, right? Where is it being held? It's being held in, like,
basically Carson Daly's studio.
And, like, who? It's all these people in, like, gowns and tuxedos. Like, who is at this match?
That finale is so terrible.
They couldn't afford an arena, even though that clearly would have been in an arena. But instead, it's in a weird, like, banquet hall. It's the most fucked up thing.
It is. But I'll tell you what, though, and the genius of Vince was, and, you know, God bless Tiny Lister, that he did the very best that he could. But I'll tell you, when Zeus showed up in WWF, I lost my mind as a kid, because I was terrified. I thought he was really going to hurt Hulk Hogan. Like, I was convinced this guy was going to kill Hogan.
I got to see Zeus, because that was 89, I guess, was the year that Survivor Series was in Chicago, so I got to go to Survivor Series, and...
Oh, man, that's such a great... Like, it's a terrible match, but it's...
Oh, yeah, no, it was garbage. I was bummed out, because Rowdy Roddy Piper, who was, like, the main reason I wanted to go, just ended up getting counted out, and I thought that was such a pussy, like, way to resolve that, but...
Oh, I see countouts.
Me, too, but back to Hogan. Let me ask you this. Okay, I actually like Hogan in Rocky III. I think he's used well. I mean, he's just playing a wrestler, you know, but he's real flamboyant, and it works. And yet he's playing a wrestler again in No Holds Barred just a few years later. My problem with Rip is that it's just, it's so, it's three letters. It, like, give him a last name at least. Make him, like, Rip Reynolds, and then it's, he's obviously a stand-in for Hulk Hogan, but...
His name should have been, like, Rip Steel.
Whatever. Just Rip something, because I cannot accept the fact that the most famous wrestler in the world is just named Rip. even though he's clearly playing Hulk Hogan. Like, just fucking call him Hulk Hogan. He's, everything about him is Hulk Hogan. The font on his shirts and bandanas is the Hulkamania font, except it says Rip'em. Why they... I guess I'm sure it was some sort of proprietary thing. So he's the star then of No Holds Barred. How is a guy, and there's definitely a sub question to this too. Mm-hmm. How is a guy who manages to become the face of professional wrestling? I mean, he's the Michael Jordan of wrestling. Like, he's the guy. He's the guy that made it famous. He was the champ for so long. He was just the biggest star they had. Right? You don't get that way without being a performer and having charisma or whatever. And it, as he first walked into the ring in No Holds Barred, I was fascinated. Like, wow, America really embraced a dude with, like, long hair who is bald and that ridiculous mustache. So how is he, quote-unquote, good, because that's my sub-question, in the WWF, and is so fucking terrible in a movie in which he's essentially playing himself?
You know what it is? It's the personality above everything else. Because the reality is, anybody who's watched wrestling and has any sort of opinion in terms of, like, how good a match is on, like, a technical level will tell you, first and foremost, Hogan is probably one of the worst wrestlers ever.
This was sort of my sub-question. Why the fuck was he such a popular wrestler? And as a kid,
genius,
I loved him because
of Vince McMahon.
I loved him as a kid because I believed that I was supposed to, because he was the guy that you loved. He was the hero. He was the good guy. He was whatever. But now I question why I liked him ever, because, he was garbage.
It was infectious. Do you know what I mean? Like, when he would talk, like, it was just the way that he would, like, engage an audience. Like, you could not stop and, like, listen to him.
But then why doesn't that translate to movies?
Because, you know, I think it's a different level of performance. Because I think when you're playing to a live audience, it's so much different than playing to a crew of 20 or 40 or 50 people and a director and other actors where it's so staged.
Yeah.
Like, yes, obviously wrestling's staged and all that kind of stuff, and they prep their promos and stuff like that. But there's something about being live that I think really help. Like, I think some people are just better in that scenario than they are, like, sort of, when they rehearse a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of a guy like Hogan. He can go out and cut a promo now, and it may not even be the best promo he's ever done, but God, like, he's still so good at just getting the crowd going, whether or not they even like him anymore. Like, you know, the thing is, it's like his days are gone, but, you know, he was in TNA recently and stuff like that, but, like, he would still, like, come out. He hasn't wrestled, but yet everybody, you could just stop on a dime when Hogan walks out. Because he's just that guy, and there's just something about it, and it's hard to pinpoint. It's, you know, and it's, for better or for worse, it's like, it's kind of how, like, The Rock is, because you can't, there's just something, and you don't know what it is.
Right.
And you know, and the thing is, it's like, and what, you know, The Rock's able to do is he's really good at both sides of the equation. Like, he can go and kill it with a live audience, and then he can come in and just totally nail it with something that's so pre-rehearsed that, you know, it should come off robotic, kind of like how Hogan usually would in movies. And God help me, I watched Thunder in Paradise.
Well, like, it's clearly such a different skill set, obviously. And the thing about a lot of No Holds Barred is that Hogan doesn't really pitch his performance differently for a movie camera than he did for. So what worked, you know, in a pay-per-view or in a wrestling arena doesn't work in front of a movie camera, because he's doing the same thing. I'm thinking of the scene where he shakes the dude down in the parking garage. What's that smell? And the guy says, Dookie. Yeah. The way that he bugs out his eyes and his ridiculous, like, over-the-top sniffing, and then the way he just growls, yeah. What's that smell? If he's doing that in a wrestling ring, or even, like you said, on a promo, none of us bat an eye. Maybe that's just a question of context, and we're like, yeah, that's Hulk Hogan. Hogan's got a Hogan. But in a movie, it comes off like the worst shit you've ever seen.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and that scene is just so deplorable.
Everything in that movie is the worst.
And honestly, God, like, you would think that movie would have buried him.
Yeah,
you think it would have, but it—I mean, not in
terms of wrestling. It buried his movie career, sort of. Although not really, right?
Not really. Because he was doing Suburban Commando with Christopher Lloyd, like a year later.
And then he was.
And I think it came out a year after that. Yeah,
Santa with Muscles, right?
Oh, I didn't get to see it this Christmas.
And guess what I found out? Santa with Muscles was produced by Jordan Belfort, who is the subject matter. That's the guy that DiCaprio's playing in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, there you go. Huh. I have not seen Santa with Muscles either. I was desperately wanted to see Suburban Commando when it came out, but I did not, and I don't think I caught up with it till years later, and it's a piece of shit, you know.
Of course.
Hogan has no business in movies, but as I was watching No Holds Barred, I was starting to wonder why he ever had business in a wrestling ring, too, because, yeah, he was never interesting to watch as a wrestler, so I don't know why we liked him so much.
He just had the ability to sort of feed off the guys he was in the ring with. I mean, he was just that good at it. Like, you know, the thing is, like, you put him in a ring with somebody like Macho Man Savage, you know, who's just so athletic at everything he did.
Yeah.
You know, but the way that he could sell it, you know, it's all, you know, the thing is, like, with wrestling, too, it's just about selling it, too. You know, and it's a lot of these guys, you know, if they can sell really well, like, that just kills with an audience, especially in the 80s, when you could get away with a leg drop as a finisher. Like, you could totally do that. You do that now, and you'll get booed out of the arena. Like, that just, you know, that just doesn't fly. So it's, you know, we were just less discerning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was just more, it really was about the entertainment, you know? And I think it's weird, like, as I've grown up, like, I've come to appreciate it more for the athleticism of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's what I totally love. Like, and that's why I go to, like, local shows and stuff like that, because I was like, well, that's not, like, real wrestling. I'm like, God damn, it is.
Yeah, right.
These guys, you know, I mean, they're doing some really awesome stuff, because, you know, now with WWE being so safe, because it is family friendly,
yeah,
you know, they can't do a lot of the stuff that they used to do. So, like, for me, I love going to local shows, because you just see some of the most ridiculous things. So, yeah. But one of the things I wanted to mention, just because, like, I think we mentioned that, because what I'll tell you is that Hogan, the only time that his, like, Hogan-esque-ness worked, Gremlins 2.
Yeah. I'll give you that.
Because I remember sitting in the movie, because, you know, I had no idea, no clue. And we were at the drive-in, and just sitting there, and that happened. And I was, like, I was screaming in the car, and my mom's like, shut up! And I was just like, oh, my God! Like, I had no idea. And I know that there was, like, the two versions of it, but I was lucky enough to get the Hogan version.
The other version didn't show up till home video.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. But, yeah, when I saw Hogan at the drive-in, I was like, oh, my God. You just put Hulk Hogan in a Gremlins movie? No way.
Yeah, right.
Like,
all your worlds colliding.
It was so much for me to handle. It really was.
I kept going back to see Gremlins 2 when it came to the second run theater, just because I wanted to see everyone's reaction. Not to Hulk Hogan, but just to that fake out.
To the moment, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm trying to think of some other wrestlers that we should touch on. One wrestler, and we kind of talked about how they should maybe branch out and try different things. There is one wrestler who sort of did that. And that would be Kane in one of your favorite movies, See No Evil.
Oh, man. I just rewatched it this weekend, too.
That movie. It was a giant piece of shit.
It is an endurance test. But I will tell you, I'm still excited for the sequel.
Like, well, I am, too. Yeah, because it sounds like...
I was just like, there's still nuggets of decent things going on in this movie.
Oh, no, that I totally disagree with. But I'm excited for the sequel because of who's involved.
Well, yeah. But, no, I think there's... I think there... You know, the idea of the Jacob Goodnight character, or I think that's what his name was.
Sure.
I think it was, because it's funny, because his name in real life is Glenn Jacobs, so I always thought it was weird that the initials were reversed.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, and, you know, I mean, the thing is, it's like, okay, they gave us a tease of the mythology. I just want to know how he gets shot in the back of the head, but he's still walking around? Is he dead? Is he not dead?
The dog pees on him, right?
I guess. Like,
there's that weird, like, after credits thing where, like, a dog pees and he comes back to life.
But he gets shot in the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the reason that they end up at that hotel is because his mom, you know, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, sorry. You trust me, I'm not ruining too much for you. But, like, these teens get lured to the hotel by basically his mom who wants revenge for him getting shot in the head. But he didn't die, but she still needs her revenge against whatever. And it's, like, so ridiculous because I'm like, well, did he die or did he not die? Because he has maggots in the back of his head.
Well,
but
Jason Voorhees drowned in a swamp, but he stuck around for 8 more movies.
But there was no, like, there's no explanation as to how or why he would come back. Like, he was just shot in the head because he was a weird, like, it just, there's so many continuity issues with that movie and that story. But again, like, I think that there's an interesting idea to the character of Jacob Goodnight that I think, like, if you go and sort of redefine the mythology and give it a good context, I think it'll work.
Yeah. I thought that was a smart move for him if he's going to try and get into movies, and smart for WWE Studios to try and make a different kind of movie, because they had put out maybe a couple action movies, although not many. This was one of their first, right, actually?
Yeah. Well, they had produced The Rundown. That was one of the first ones. I think when they actually launched WWE Studios, I think that was one of the first that they produced was The Rundown. And then they were like, oh, okay. But yeah, it's weird because, like, I sort of have a love-hate relationship with the character of Kane. Like, he's been around for so long that it's been like, okay, it's the same thing over and over. But now that he's kind of different now on TV, so it's better now. But, like, for me, I was kind of not as excited to see him do a horror movie because I'm like, well, of course he is. Like,
right.
Was Undertaker busy? I don't know.
Like, probably
was. And good for him because he made a smart choice. But I think it's really interesting to me that WWE now would choose to resurrect that franchise.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, they could just go and make a totally different horror movie if they wanted to. And they have, you know what I mean? And it's just curious to me that, like, we're going to stick with this franchise. So they've got to have a lot of faith in the Soskas. Because I think, you know, I'm actually really enjoying what they do now in terms of they make their own content, but they also have been acquiring stuff too.
Well, that's the thing that is kind of strange to me, is that most of the WWE Studios movies that actually get a theatrical release are movies that have nothing to do with wrestling. I mean, a lot of the vehicles for their guys end up going direct to video. I have a sneaking suspicion that See No Evil 2 may not get a huge theatrical release.
I don't think it will, and I don't think it needs it. You know what I mean?
Like, no, I don't either, but, like, Dead Man Down and The Call both get massive theatrical releases, even though they have nothing to do with wrestling, you know, but those are both WWE movies.
But here's the thing, and I'll tell you why it was really smart of them to do a movie like The Call. I didn't see it, so I can't really...
The Call?
Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, my God, it's such a piece of
shit. It's terrible, but, you know, I'll tell you what, you know who that movie caters to? It caters to 30
Halle
to 40...
Berry.
Well, it does cater to Halle Berry. Who doesn't? I would cater to Halle Berry if I could.
I would cater to Halle Berry in, like,
not with that hair, though.
In 2001. Yeah, what the fuck are they
doing?
That
was such, like, a terrible hair.
Halle Berry, you're too hot. How do we make you look worse?
I know. I'm like, just put that terrible wig on her. Oh, it was awful. But anyway, the thing is, because WWE is so family-oriented now, like, they're basically, what they were doing was focusing on the mom audience. With that movie.
I guess. That movie's
really...
What I mean? Yeah.
Because it sort of has that appeal of horror, but it has sort of that safe horror that, like, 30 to 40-year-old moms love. Like, do you remember that movie Cellular with Kim Basinger?
I do. I like that movie.
Yeah, great movie. And you know who really loved that movie and who made me watch it? My mom. Because that is that perfect demographic of really, you know, they've got the thriller components that kind of go horror. But it's like, it has like the decent cast, it's perfect. It was one of the smartest things he did, because it made a shit ton of money too, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it did well, yeah.
Yeah. I think they're doing a sequel too or something like
that.
Oh,
good.
Good, yeah, right?
That movie needed a sequel for sure. It's just kind of weird that, and whatchamacallit, that movie that No One Lives, which is a movie that you love, that was another horror movie that they put out. And they did kind of stick a wrestler in that, although not that you would really know. I mean,
and again, that was kind of a smart way to do it, because they could have gone. And, you know, I enjoy the character of Brodus Clay. He doesn't do much on TV these days. They're kind of rebranding him. But, you know, he was, you know, a good guy. He used to be like Snoop Dogg's bodyguard, which, you know, you kind of love that story all in itself. Like, I got to interview him, and I just wanted to talk to him about that, because I can imagine the stories.
Yeah.
And I just thought the way that they did that was clever, like putting a star into it, or putting a wrestler into it, but without, one, making him a star, two, you know, and putting somebody who is sort of at the A level of talent, like a John Cena or Randy Orton. Because I'm telling you, if I saw No One Lives and John Cena's in that movie, I know he's not dying.
Yeah, right.
You know, John Cena lives. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, you're not going to kill John Cena in
the movie. Could have been called John Cena Lives.
Oh, that's an excellent idea for a sequel.
Yeah, I like it.
He comes in for the sequel and takes down Luke Evans.
He could totally wear jean shorts.
Jorts? the Jort Nation, yes. Oh, it's so awful. Like, just grow up and buy some pants, man.
Did you rewatch? I know you had sent me your list of stuff that you were trying to get through, but did you get through... Is it 12 rounds, 16 rounds? What the hell is the title?
No, 12 rounds. I didn't get through 12 rounds, but I did get through Ready to Rumble.
Oh, all right. I guess we can talk Ready to Rumble.
Have you seen it?
I saw it the weekend it came out, and I have not seen it since. I'll maybe catch 5 minutes here or there.
It's on cable a lot these days.
Yeah, TNT used to show it a lot because, obviously,
Ted Turner
used to own it. The thing is, I was not... I never, when I did follow wrestling, it was WWF, and I never got into NWA or later WCW. Although I did watch it a little bit around that time for whatever reason, because I was home on, was that Monday nights that it used to be on? I don't know. Monday Nitro, right? Yeah, so I was home. So I did watch it a little because I do very much remember seeing David Arquette win the heavyweight title. In promotion for that movie.
And that's the only reason because that was the thing, like, I had heard about him, and I was one of those, I grew up watching NWA, but I did not follow WCW at all, because it was on cable at a time when I didn't have, it was like, you know, because TNT and stuff, I didn't have TNT growing up, so I was lucky that WWF was, like, on channel 60 or 66 or whatever. You know, so I was not a WCW fan at all. And, you know, of course, when I saw the trailer for it, I was like, okay. And that was kind of at a time where I was just kind of starting to get back into wrestling. Like, I wasn't quite there, but, like, you know, I was kind of curious about, you know, I knew nothing about WCW except that Hogan went there and he was a bad guy at some point, you know. And God love me, but I fucking love Ready to Rumble as a fan. Like, it's an awful, awful movie if you're not a wrestling fan. I will so admit to that. Never watch that movie if you don't like wrestling. Because you will hate that movie, and you're so justified. And I can't even justify it, you know, beyond that. But, yeah, it's such a perfect depiction of being a fan and the things that you're willing to do as a fan. Yeah. And it's interesting to me, like... it's weird that they would cast Oliver Platt first and foremost.
Oliver Platt is one of those guys who, to me, makes anything better just by being in it. Like, he's always good, and so if Oliver Platt shows up, you know that you're going to be safe for a little while. And he's fine in the movie. Like, he's funny, and ha-ha, Oliver Platt is a wrestler. But couldn't they have, like, cast a wrestler?
Well, and I think that's what sort of makes it interesting for me, is that he's a character actor who's been working for years. I don't know what his situation is, but I thought it was really interesting that they did go with an actor for it, because he had to get in the ring. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that they could do with stunt guys, but there's a lot of stuff in that movie that they couldn't.
Right.
And he's not a svelte, you know, a spelt gentleman, no. you know, if I'm being polite, is a fellow non-spelty. You know, I would probably not be able to do a third of the things that he had to physically do for that. And that itself is kind of impressive.
Yeah.
Because I was like, Oliver Platt, like, you know, this, never in a million years would you think he's this, he would play a professional wrestler, let alone basically like a late 90s, early 2000s version of a Hogan.
Yeah, right. He was the wrestler. The
He was Jimmy King. Yeah. Hail to the King, baby. And it was like, what? Oliver, and I was just like, okay. And the thing is, it's like, I hated Goldberg.
Okay.
As a wrestler, like, I just never bought that I can't lose gimmick, which is so funny because I actually, I stood in line to, like, meet a bunch of wrestlers once at, like an FIE event at, like, some mall. And I had to stand in line to meet Goldberg, but yeah. I was, like, already in line for everybody else, so I was going to feel rude if I didn't stop, so sure. Everybody was, makes fun of me, so yes, I have met Goldberg. And ultimately, I have come to appreciate him a little more after Santa Slay, so. But,
he did, you know, he did make a couple movies, didn't he?
He did, he was in Longest Yard also, that had a bunch of wrestlers.
I forgot too. About that, he's in Looney Tunes Back in Action, yet another Joe Dante God. Movie with a wrestler.
Yeah.
He's in Universal Soldier The Return, which was the first movie I ever saw him in.
Oh, yeah, he is, isn't he?
That movie sucks. Yeah.
It does. I haven't even thought of that. Yeah. But the thing for me, like, Ready to Rumble is so fascinating to me because of the cast. Because it's like, it is all WCW, and you've got, like, you know, Joe Pantoliano, Joey Pants, as I like to refer to him as, basically playing, like, a Ted Turner, Eric Bischoff mashup, which, right. you know, only really, you know, fans are going to be like, oh, my God, this is brilliant. You know, which, for me, I'm like, how did you get a movie with, like, Oliver Platt, you know, Rose McGowan at that time, who was, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, Joey Pants and Martin Landau, of all people.
Academy and, Award winner.
Oh, my God. I'm like, that to me is just endlessly fascinating. I would have loved to have been in that meeting. Like, no. We're going to totally legitimize this WCW movie, and we're going to get Martin Landau to play a wrestler. And you know what? He is going to take out two men that are, like, three times the size
right.
of him and totally sell it. And he does. Sal Bandini is, like, the greatest thing ever. It's just, like, that movie has so much charm to it. It's so terrible, but I love it.
It is terrible, and I understand as a fan of wrestling why you would love it, but I remember feeling at the time, something about it rubbed me the wrong way because it just felt like a 90-minute commercial for WCW. Instead of being a movie that's sort of set in the world of wrestling, which is fine, I get, it was way more about, like, selling these personalities. And then what's even weirder is that, like you had said, all the major roles are not played by wrestling personalities, they're played by actors. Like,
yeah.
They probably could have filled some of those slots. Again, I don't remember who was, yeah. Did WCW even have, like, a hot chick at that time? Like, couldn't somebody have played the Rose McGowan part? Obviously, they needed some movie stars to open the movie, but, yeah.
But, I mean, that movie was made for a specific audience, and they yeah. could, you know. So, again, that was, like, totally weird and fascinating to me. And speaking of Ready to Rumble, that actually does remind me, one guy who's sort of done some stuff that I'd be really fascinated to see is Diamond Dallas Page.
I mean, I know he's in Devil's Rejects. I can't think of anything else.
Well, he's Ready to Rumble. He's kind of, like, the villain in it.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool, which, you know, again, like, he's not a guy that was, like, a super awesome wrestler, like... You know, his best move is basically a ripoff of, you know, I totally forget. But he's, you know, he's a guy who kind of shows up in, like, little horror movies here and there. Like, he was in, like, Gala Walkers and, you know, he was, you know, that kind of stuff. But he, again, I think he's a guy, if he actually got some really decent material, I think he could be a guy who could play, like, you know, not obviously I don't think he could open a movie, but I think he could be, like, sort of that next guy.
Right.
And there's a lot of charisma there. And again, I wasn't a guy I really liked as a wrestler, but I think, especially after Devil's Rejects, I liked him in that. I thought he was.
Yeah, he definitely, like, Rob Zombie knew exactly how to use him, and he has exactly the sort of look and presence for the kind of part. And that's the thing, is, like, people don't know how to use these guys a lot of times. Like, every time I watch Roadhouse, I appreciate how great Terry Funk is. In that movie.
I just appreciate everything of Roadhouse. But yes, Terry Funk being a highlight.
Because they knew exactly how to use him. And they're not trying to make him a movie star. And they're not calling attention to the fact that, like, he's a wrestler. But it's like, he's a guy who looks the part. Who can do his own stunts, essentially. and, you know, is not...
You have a little attitude.
Right, but not calling a ton of attention to himself. And Diamond Dallas Page kind of does that same thing in Devil's Rejects, where if you know who he is and you're a fan of wrestling, you're like, holy shit, look who it is. But if you don't, you're just like, wow, that guy seems very authentic to me. And yeah. I wish more filmmakers could sort of use wrestlers in that way. But maybe, you know, maybe, like I said, it's a proprietary thing with Vince McMahon or whatever, or maybe it's the wrestlers themselves who are so used to being the star in their organization that they don't necessarily want to come and play, like, the number six guy in a movie. Like, I want to be number one or number two because that's what I am in my day job. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you don't get that far in the business without some sort of an ego, I'm sure. So,
right, right.
For better or for worse.
Right.
So,
are there wrestlers now who you think, or I'll say even past or now, is there somebody who you think, like, oh, that person should have made movies, or that person could possibly, like, pop in movies?
You know, I always felt, and again, it's one of those things that, you know, you realize after seeing the sad reality of it all, but I really thought Jake Roberts would have been a guy who could have done something really awesome.
Yeah.
Because he just, he was the guy that you loved to hate in the 80s, and he was so good at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then thank God he's, like, so much better now. He's actually getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, which is so cool. Again, speaking of Diamond Dallas Page, you know, totally basically saving his life. I think he's a guy that, you know, had they sort of figured out, you know, honest to God, like, you know, for as amazing as Roddy is and they live, like, it's easily a role that I think somebody like Jake Roberts, you know, also could have done a really interesting take on it.
Yeah.
You know, not the same take, but a totally different take. And I think it would have been a different attitude. You know, so it's interesting. Like, I would have loved to have seen him, like Scott Hall, again, another DDP guy, you know, who basically just totally cleaned up because of Diamond Dallas Page. Like, I think, like, his whole, like, a Chico, like, that was so underutilized. And, like, the way that, like, NWO, when they first hit, like, WCW, and the way that they were over, and the amount of charisma that those guys had, that was so much, like, that totally could have translated elsewhere. Like, I don't know if it was movies, but even TV, like, they're definitely, they could have done more with those guys. Like, Kevin Nash, you know, he's, I don't think he's ever the strongest talker, and, you know, God, he's great as Super Shredder, you know, that's a perfect role for him. And again, you know, he was good. He was also in Longest Yard, I think, too, and he was fine in that. I think he played, like, a nasty guard or something like that, or one of the inmates, I don't know. But, you know, he was a guy that, you know, everything that he got offered outside of wrestling was perfectly suitable for him because he just didn't quite get over that hump. And again, Scott Hall was a guy that totally could have. Like, Ravishing Rick Rude would have been amazing. Oh my God.
He could have just taken all the parts.
In pornos.
Yeah, he could have taken all the parts they were offering Burt Reynolds.
Yeah. No. Or at least his mustache could have.
Yeah, right.
if it wasn't Burt Reynolds, it would have been Tom Selleck. But yeah, you know, he was a guy who totally had a lot of charisma. And yeah, these days, like, it's hard to tell because, like, I really would have thought a guy like The Miz, especially because he was a guy who came up on reality TV,
right?
Who's so natural in front of cameras. And he's a really decent, you know, he's decent on the mic in WWE. Not the best wrestler, but he's, you know, he's got a few moments, you know, his career, and God help me, he headlined WrestleMania one year.
Wow.
Yeah, if you can believe that. That's where wrestling was, like, 5 years ago. So, wrap your head around that. But he's just, I didn't watch the Christmas movie. I wanted to. I missed the Christmas Bounty movie, which was a bummer. I meant to set my DVR.
I did not see it.
But he was the Marine 3, and man, he's just not good.
And I actually thought he was okay. I thought the Marine 3 was terrible, but he wasn't. He wasn't my problem with it.
He wasn't the main problem, but I wasn't a fan.
See, I thought he was okay, and honestly, some of my reaction may have been because I thought he was so much better than Ted DiBiase Jr. in the Marine 2. Which is a movie I loathed, and I did not like him one bit in it. So then I think maybe I was just like, well, it's better than the second one, so maybe Maybe it was just a matter of expectations. I haven't gone back to revisit it. He could be terrible. I have no idea. But I remember at the time thinking, like, he wasn't necessarily what was wrong with the movie.
He wasn't what was right with it either, though.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, like, the Marine 2 wasn't even supposed to be Ted DiBiase Jr., but I don't know that if it had been Randy Orton that movie would have been any better.
I haven't seen 12 Rounds 2, which is Randy Orton, right?
Yeah, it's, like, they should have called it, like, 24 Rounds, or...
Yeah, really.
Something. Yeah, 12 Rounds 2, that's just too many numbers and too many different places. It's just too much.
I didn't love 12 Rounds, the first one, and... again, I say this as somebody who liked The Marine and liked John Cena in it. I did not love 12 Rounds, so I was less inclined to see 12 Rounds 2, especially with Randy Orton, who my exposure to him is very limited, but I've never been drawn to him at all as a personality or as anything. There's nothing about him that makes me want to watch him in a movie.
Yeah, he's one of my least... You know, I get why he's... lasted in the business as long as he has, other than the fact that he has really good, you know, heritage.
Cowboy Bob?
Yeah, you don't fire Cowboy Bob's son, even after he fucks up a lot. he is not a guy that I enjoy watching, you know. No. I will admit, like, I've never been a fan, like, ever. I've never seen an interesting, you know, and it's like, it sucks because he's had some really good opponents who've really tried, but he's not an interesting wrestler to me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what about wrestling movies that aren't necessarily, like, produced by WWE or...
Gotcha.
I'm having such a hard time thinking of the name of this one right now, and that's embarrassing because I used to watch it all the time as a kid. Body Slam. It was Body Slam.
Oh, with, yeah.
And technically, Rowdy Piper is in that. So, actually, there's a couple, because I think Captain Lou Albano's in there, and Rowdy Piper's partner was somebody, too.
Oh, shit. I know Fatu is in it, but I don't remember.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Sorry. I was like, oh, man, which one of the Samoans?
That's who he was, yes.
Yeah.
He was one of the Samoans.
But you can't hate that movie because it has Charles Nelson Reilly. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
and Hal Needham directed it, so it's, you know,
and
what I mean?
I did not realize that Hal Needham directed it, but that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I only realized it just because I only kind of revisited that movie existed because he passed away, like, I think, like, last fall.
Yeah.
And that was the only reason I was, like, looking, and I was like, oh, my God, I didn't realize he directed that.
Yeah. And that movie has a charm because it was really the first kind of wrestling movie produced. I mean, I know Peter Falk had made All the Marbles, but after,
which,
like,
I've never seen.
Nor have I. But, you know, I know the wrestling craze really caught on in the 80s, and you had rock and wrestling. And so this seemed like the first movie to sort of try to capitalize on that. And obviously I watched it a lot on cable, A, because it had wrestling, and B, because Roddy Piper was in it. But so it's very much of that period and tries to capture what wrestling was like in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Way more so, again, than No Holds Barred does, because No Holds Barred tries to be a commercial for Hulk Hogan and the WWF. But Body Slam is one that I'm thinking of, and obviously the other big one that I'm thinking of is The Wrestler. I don't know what your feelings are about The Wrestler.
Dear God, I love The Wrestler.
Yeah.
It's so sad because, one, it's like, you know, there's a lot of guys who sort of play, like, wrestlers, like, you know, around Mickey Rourke that I recognize.
Yeah.
So that ultimately was very sad for me. Sort of funny that there's a guy that's actually still in WWE now that's actually in that movie. He used to be Kay Quick, and now he's R-Truth, and he was in that. But I remember seeing that it was New Year's Eve, the year it was 2008.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it was, and I sobbed. I sobbed at the end of that movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, like, one of these things, like, you know, as you grow up as a fan, like, you just don't really think about these things. And that's even, like, 9 years removed from a movie like Beyond the Mat.
Well, see, and I wonder how much more I was affected by The Wrestler, which I think is a good movie.
Yeah.
But I would definitely feel like I was more affected by it because as I was watching it, having seen Beyond the Mat, I felt like I was just watching Jake the Snake's story played out.
Yeah. And it's sad because, honest to God, it could be the story of probably 80% of the WWF roster from the
really?
80s. Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of those guys really suffered, you know? And, you know, there's, I mean, it's just, there's a reason a lot of these guys die from heart attacks.
Yeah.
You know, they just put themselves through too much. And it's like, and then it's like, it's not even so much the steroid use, but it's like, even like in the 90s and like when backyard wrestling became a thing and then like things like ECW started and then like, you know, WWF and WCW started going towards hardcore stuff. Like, suddenly these guys were expected to go through tables and go off scaffolds
right.
and hit each other with ladders. And, you know, it's all for the, it, you know, it's a blood sport at that point. And, you know, it's like, as a fan, you're like, oh my God, like, you feel kind of like a dick at the end of the day. Because I'm like, I just paid $20 to watch a guy hit another guy with a baseball bat with barbed wire.
Right.
But I enjoyed it. But what does that say about me? So it's interesting because, like, you know, I don't think as being a fan, like, a lot of people really realize that. And I think also people who outside of being a wrestling fan who don't know about that world, I think it also showed them that there was sort of a level of commitment that they didn't probably consider
right.
when, you know, they're thinking about what wrestlers do. They think of like the glitz and the glamour of like they show up and that's it, you know, and everything's perfect and they're rolling in money when a lot of these guys can't even afford to like, you know, pay for their, you know, pay for dinner.
Right. So to bring it back to movies right before
yes.
before we finish, who would you say is the worst wrestler turned actor, and or what is the worst movie star a wrestler in your opinion?
Ooh, well, for wrestler performance, I would have to go with Great Khali and Get Smart.
Okay.
Because
I've seen Get Smart, but I don't remember that performance.
He was the big guy, the big Indian guy. That was having problems with his wife.
Okay.
God, and he was the guy
I think
was
I blocked
him.
That movie out.
He's
yeah.
like 7 foot tall. He looks really gangly. Like, he kind of looks like a, like, you know, it's, yeah. If you saw his picture, you'd be like, oh,
sure.
that guy.
Okay.
So anyways, that was awful. That was like, why are you in Get Smart? That's just no.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know who he is.
Yes, although admittedly, I enjoyed Dwayne Johnson in that movie, so. And
yeah, again,
I still
he was not what was wrong with that movie at all.
No, I have a soft spot for that movie though. I don't know why, because it's not good. But
that movie should have been a home run. Like I thought, all the trailers were good. I thought Steve Carell was well cast. Anne Hathaway's a fox, whatever. Like I thought that movie had a ton of stuff going for it, and the fact that it was not great. And I knew immediately when there was. I remember watching. I think I saw it like on opening day, and they don't even use the theme music at the right spot of the opening. Like instead, they use an ABBA song when they should be playing the Get Smart theme. And I was like, oh, they don't know what they're doing. Like I figured out in the first 10 minutes of that movie that they blew it.
Yeah.
But whatever. All right. So he's the worst.
Yes.
What's the worst movie starring a wrestler?
Oh my God.
There
wow.
Are
that is
so many
is,
bad ones.
That is like picking a needle in a haystack.
Yeah. A haystack of shitty wrestling movies.
Yeah. I don't even think Doom is the worst movie, but...
No. I don't think anything with Dwayne Johnson could be considered the worst. Because
no.
Doom is a garbage movie, but...
Oh, man.
But again, he's
I mean,
good in everything.
Shit. I mean, Mr. Nanny's pretty bad.
I've never seen Mr. Nanny.
Oh, God. You didn't miss anything. I'm trying to think of, like, what... Oh, you know what I would have to say is a movie that was probably should have been the best movie about wrestling recently that was really awful was that Monster Brawl, which had wrestlers in it, and I was
oh,
like...
Oh, God
okay,
damn it, that movie. God damn that movie.
that movie should have been a fucking home run.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Come on. You telling me you couldn't have cast that whole movie with former wrestlers as monsters? And, well, I mean, you had a couple of them in there, but no, that movie was...
And maybe it's my fault not knowing what it was going in, but I honestly, and I don't know at what point I realized it, but I couldn't believe that, like, that was the movie. That, you know what I mean? I think I went into it thinking it was going to be sort of a narrative and then punctuated by these wrestling matches, but it's literally just 90 minutes of wrestling matches, like
it is
shitty wrestling matches with shitty makeup on shitty monsters, and man, I really did not like that movie. But talk about a movie made for you, like horror and wrestling in the same movie.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Like that, I mean, I could have written that movie.
Yeah.
I could have.
You probably should have.
I probably should have.
It was garbage.
I know, and that sucks because I really wanted to like it.
Yeah.
Even as like a low, like, you know, sort of a, like a low budget type of thing. Like I was totally okay with that, but no, it just.
Yeah, it was really shit.
Trying to think like the worst, you know, I mean, it may, God, I mean, so that's the thing. It's like some of the movies that WWE had made for a few years, they were really, I mean, The Chaperone's pretty fucking terrible. I almost wish you were a drinker so you could drink through that because that you're going to need it.
Yeah.
But you know, I may have to go Knucklehead.
Knucklehead starring The Big Show?
Yeah. It's just, it's so, so awful. It's so many ways of awful. Like, and I feel bad because like Big Show seems like a super nice guy, but
sure,
he's not what I would call, you know, star, you know, movie star material.
No. And that's the problem. Again, it's same with Andre the Giant. Like you were never going to put Andre the Giant into a movie unless you found that once-in-a-lifetime thing, like The Princess Bride, and that's kind of true of The Big Show, just with his size and his look and his voice. Like, you need to find the exact right thing for him, and then it would be like, oh, hey, that was at least good casting, if not great acting. But obviously, Knucklehead was not that movie.
No, Knucklehead was not. And I will say probably my favorite movie that WWE, like, acquired, other than No One Lives, because I, you know, I talk about that a lot, but the movie The Day.
Wait, I saw The Day, right? No, I didn't see The Day. Confused that with the other one.
Oh, with The Divide?
Yes, The Divide. Thank you for being able to read my mind.
Hey, no problem. That's what I'm here for. No, they actually, it's funny, because those both have Michael Eklund in them.
And maybe that's where I'm confusing them.
Yes, who I really like him. I like that guy. I think he's in See No Evil, too, also. But anyway, I digress. But The Day, like, that was, like, one of the first movies, like, WWE acquired. I think they acquired it, like, at Toronto.
Okay.
And I thought that was, like, a really awesome move. Because, one, I'd heard about the movie for a few years. Like, I had done a couple interviews with, I think Corey Albrecht is in it. And he was a guy who was in, Battle Los Angeles, that awful, awful movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that movie was awful, too. So he was talking about this movie The Day, and I had talked to Sean Ashmore, and he had mentioned it, and so I was really curious about it. And, you know, for a movie that they, one, again, made with zero money, you know, I mean, it was as micro-budget as it goes. Like, I thought that they did something that you don't always see with that kind of post-apocalyptic setting, which I really appreciated. And I thought there was a lot of interesting elements going on, and they add some cannibal things to it, which I thought was kind of cool. And again, Michael Eklund is really good as like this sort of like fucked up guy that they have to like basically deal with. That, you know.
So he's playing the same part as he did in The Divide.
He is, but not to the same degree. Like he's clearly the villain in The Day.
Like, he's not in The Divide.
I would say there's a lot of villains. I think humanity.
But he's right up there.
Divide.
Holy cow!
Oh yeah.
Movie.
It is. Well, hit Milo too. God.
Yeah. I'll hit you with one more bonus question before we wrap up.
Please.
Favorite Dwayne Johnson movie, not counting Paper, Rock, Scissors.
Oh. Oh, Jesus Christ. This is, oh no. You know, I really, oh God. See, for me, like, honestly, like, my favorite probably is still The Rundown.
Okay.
Just because it was, like, the first, and I was, like, for it being, like, his first starring role, like, I thought, holy shit, like, he's acting, like, with Christopher Walken, and he's, like, he's right there.
Yeah. Scorpion King was first, right?
Oh, yeah,
I feel like
it was
before The Rundown, but I know what you mean. I mean, I don't always.
I feel like it was, like, his own character, like, him playing, like, a spin-off character
exactly.
or anything like that. Like, it felt like it was his real first. But, you know, honestly, like, I don't feel like, it's a cheat, but I really feel like, you know, the Fast Five and Six, like, I feel like those are really the two movies that have sort of shown that he's still really badass, but he's also got a lot to him that's not just, you know, what you're looking at.
Especially Sweat, based on those movies. Those movies, obviously, I like more than most of his other movies. I like the Rundown. For whatever reason, I've never just completely fallen in love with the Rundown, and I really want to because I like Peter Berg as a director not doing his last two or three movies. And it's got the Schwarzenegger cameo, and there's all this stuff to like about it, but I've never totally warmed to it. I still enjoy it. For whatever reason, a movie I could watch literally anytime it comes on is the Rock's remake of Walking Tall.
Oh my God, dude, I'm such a nerd that I actually took a picture of myself in front of, they had this massive billboard of it in Times Square when WrestleMania 20 was happening.
Yeah.
And I'm such a nerd that I actually, like, was in Times Square and I was like, take a picture with me with, like, the billboard behind me. That's ridiculous. I do love Walking Tall. I thought Johnny Knoxville was fucking great in that movie.
He's very entertaining, and I remember it's such an example of a movie perfectly meeting my expectations. And what I wanted out of it. Like, I sat down and I wanted to watch The Rock fuck some people up for an hour and a half, and that is exactly what that movie does.
With a 2x4.
Barely any plot, like, well, the performances are all fine, nobody really stands out as being, you know, whatever, but, like, yeah, I just think that movie's really solid, and I haven't watched it in a couple of years, so maybe it's worse than I remember, but I remember really kind of liking it at the time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I remember it was one of those things, like, I think I remember seeing it opening weekend, and I think I went twice because I'm a nerd. But you know what's actually really kind of ridiculous that I'm kind of really excited for that has nothing to do with The Rock? Oh, you know what? I'm such an idiot. You know, it's funny to me because I always kind of forget because it came out last year, but I thought he was amazing in Painting Game.
He was by far the best thing about Painting Game.
You know, it's such an uneven movie. Like, I've seen it twice, and I kind of want to go back and watch it again because I don't feel it's a perfect movie. I feel it's one of the more interesting movies that we've obviously seen from Bay and stuff. But there's so much to his performance in that movie, and even Wahlberg's performance. Like, that the first time I saw it, because I saw it at the drive-in, like, I didn't get it until I rewatched it.
Okay.
And I'm like, God, there's a lot of nuance that I just didn't pick up on the first time.
Nuance and subtle, those are not words that I've ever associated with Pain and Gain, so perhaps I too need to revisit it.
They're hiding there. I'm not even talking, there's these little nuggets of just really super...
You're being arrested for making such a crazy statement.
I know, they're here for me. Yeah, no, it's going down in North Hollywood tonight. It was funny because I don't even think about that movie, which is weird because I just watched it a second time like a month ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's one of the movies, like, again, it's like something so typical for him, like bodybuilder, but so not typical.
Yeah, well, it definitely plays a lot of that stuff sort of against him, which is cool, you know, and I did think, I was not a fan of that movie, but I did walk away from it saying, yeah, but Dwayne Johnson was really good, you know.
Gotcha.
Well, you know who we forgot to talk about is fucking Jesse Ventura.
Oh my God, Predator! That's been on Encore, like on a loop lately.
And can you ever skip it? You know what I mean?
Like, I've watched it seven times in the last two weeks.
If you have the remote and Predator's on, RoboCop is the same way with me. If either of those movies are on, it's like, well, now I'm stuck. I gotta finish this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. You don't turn off Predator ever.
Jesse Ventura. I mean, I loved Arnold Schwarzenegger in '87, but the fact it was kind of like you when Hogan showed up in Gremlins 2. Like,
yes.
The fact that Jesse Ventura was going to be in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that also not only was an action movie, which I loved, but then was like a sci-fi movie, which I also loved. That was one of those instances of like all my worlds coming together. And
yeah. I can't believe we forgot about Predator. Man, we should go stand, like, in the shame corner or something.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, then he does, Running Man, which he's used to lesser effect, I think, in that movie.
Oh, God. But again, Running Man, it's not a great movie. But I love... It's not a perfect movie.
No, it's not perfect.
No. It's got a lot of problems to it. But... Yeah. The thing is, it's like, there's something to Richard Dawson in that movie.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's what made me think of it, because I was thinking about Richard Dawson's performance and how Vince McMahon really needs to do one of those performances. And I mean, he kind of does, or used
already.
To, in wrestling, right? He didn't necessarily do it in a movie, but he would do it. That's who he played in wrestling. But yeah, I was thinking about how Vince McMahon needs to do one of those, and that's what made me think of Jesse the Body.
Oh, man. Dude, when they used to do commentary together.
Yes.
It blew my mind when I found out that the guy who's been doing commentary for WWF for all those years was actually, like, the guy behind the scenes.
Because,
you know, when we were kids, they never talked about that stuff.
Right.
Like, they talked about, you know, like, they didn't really address, like, the people behind the curtain.
Right.
Like, it's all a show. And I just remember, like, when I was a kid and I found out that that was, like, the guy who owned WWF, like, that blew my mind.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, it's weird to say it, but yeah, I'm excited for Scooby-Doo. And I'd love, you know, I wish, like, Jesse wasn't so crazy now and, like, against the fact that he used to be a wrestler.
Yeah.
He wants everybody to take him so seriously now. And I'm like, dude, nobody, no. You're on, like, conspiracy theory shit. You want people to take you seriously.
It bummed me out to see him at the beginning of No Holds Barred because I felt like it was beneath him. And because I knew that, like, he was not a fan of Hulk Hogan, as far as I know.
They hated each other.
And so to see him probably contractually obligated to appear in the Hulk Hogan starring vehicle, you know, after he himself had sort of a successful run in movies, he'd made a couple of big movies, and certainly, you know, people came away from Predator like, that's the guy that you talked about, you know?
Oh.
Nobody came away talking about Sonny Landham, like everybody was talking about Blaine. Anyway, we should wrap up because we've talked for a long time. But this was, once again, a ton of fun. I love it when you come on the show, and I know everybody listening loves it when you come on the show. So we'll have to think of another... you need to find another area of expertise. We've covered horror. We've covered wrestling. What else you got up your sleeve?
Boobs.
Boobs. Next show, all about boobs. Remember, everybody should follow Heather on Twitter at The Horror Chick and check her out at Daily Dead and thehorrorchick.blogspot.com. We will talk to you guys soon.
Later.